Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right, well, I guess we'll dive in and a couple people still join us. That's great. Thank you all for being here. How afternoon, right? On the heels of lunch. Who had the best lunch? Okay, Beth, what'd you have?
Well, I brought it in.
You brought it in. So see? Much more predictable.
It was really good.
It was really good. Ooh. Okay.
Milkshake, you bring a milkshake.
Treats for everybody. Yeah, better yet, who had the best dessert? I refrained from dessert over lunch, but need some later. So, all right. Well, I am so glad you guys are here. We're in the session titled From Ordinary to Extraordinary, Becoming the Leader That You Long to Be. My name is Jenny Catron, and I have served in church ministry for the last 11 years as executive director at Crosspoint Church in Nashville for 9 of those, and then executive pastor at Menlo Park Prez out in Menlo Park, California for 2 years. And that has been an amazing journey. I, before that, worked in the Christian music business in Nashville, Tennessee. I worked at a Christian record label called Forefront Records. If I have any old DC Talk fans in the room, or yes, my people, Audio Adrenaline, a lot of the rock and pop stuff. Stacey Orrico was another big artist that I worked with. So I did all of that back in the 90s and early 2000s and then transitioned into ministry. That was a total curveball. My husband and I were a part of planting Crosspoint Church, so church planters in the room. I was a volunteer working alongside you as leaders, helping Crosspoint get launched. And so that was just an unbelievable experience to be a part of. And then we, I came on staff a couple years in as Crosspoint was growing, and Pete was looking for a leader to come and help that next season of growth and momentum of the church. I came on board to be the executive director, overseeing staff, helped us launch campuses and all the fun stuff and painful stuff that comes with that. So I love talking church and church leadership. I love talking to ministry leaders because I just have a glimpse of how difficult and challenging your world can be at times and yet how rewarding it can be. And, you know, just connecting with that heart to share the gospel and to see people grow in their faith is what is at the core of, I think, what all of us do. And so it's fun for me to be able to connect with you all. I personally am incredibly passionate about leadership, and I probably loved leadership before I knew what the word actually meant. I was the kid who got put in charge of EBS when I was 12, and, you know, small little country church in rural Wisconsin, and, you know, they needed somebody to run VBS, so let the 12-year-old. She'll do great. But those are the kind of moments, I think, that allowed me to grow and flourish as a leader, was when people saw giftedness in me and kind of threw me in the deep end and said, yeah, you can do it, figure it out. And y'all are nodding. So I think you guys have had those moments too, or you've done that to some other young leaders to say, sometimes the best way is to just be thrown in and figure it out. So I love leadership. I love everything about it. I'm incredibly passionate about leading well. And I often tell people, lead yourself well to lead others better, because I think there's so much work that we have to do as a leader to make sure that we're leading from a healthy place, that we're healthy and thriving as a leader. And so that's kind of just that deep passion in me as I'm working with churches and nonprofits and leaders, even in the marketplace, but there are people of faith trying to live out their giftedness in the marketplace and helping them understand what does that look like and how do we do that well? How do we do that in a God-honoring way? And so, but the things I know about leadership is that it's hard. It's a difficult calling and it's a responsibility that can be weighty at times. And I just live with this tension that if I finish my life and haven't left a mark or made an impact, I'm not going to be completely content with that. I bet most of you relate to that. Just this idea that there is something that you feel like God has called you to do. There's a passion inside you. You're all are in ministry for probably that very reason, that there's a passion. You know, it's not for the dollars, right? It's not for the paycheck. You're here because there's a passion that drives you. There's a calling that you feel a sense of responsibility for. And that is the thing that has fueled me for years as a leader, and my passion to lead better is just that commitment to a calling. And I kind of have a theory theory on leadership, kind of a trajectory of leadership, if you will, that healthy, thriving leaders lead to healthy, thriving teams, lead to healthy, thriving churches or ministries, and ultimately that leads to extraordinary impact. And a lot of times we start over here on the extraordinary impact. There's this big idea, this goal, this thing that we feel called to accomplish. And so we fixate on that. But actually, we need to go all the way back here and go, am I healthy and thriving as a leader? Is my team healthy and thriving? Is my ministry or my church healthy and thriving? Because then we're going to experience that extraordinary impact, fulfillment of that vision that we feel called to. Does that resonate? So that's kind of the driving passion behind me. It's a responsibility that I think all of us feel called to. And it's a good news, bad news scenario, this whole idea of leadership, in that we all need to be healthy leaders, and yet we're just still human, right? We're still broken folks. And so there's a tension in that of trying to figure out, what does it look like to be a healthy, thriving leader in the midst of, I'm still figuring out my own junk. Like, so if I have a team of people I have to lead, if there's a ministry or an organization or a church that I'm called to lead, and yet I know every day that I'm still wrestling through some of my own stuff, right? That can trigger a bunch of insecurities. It can trigger a bunch of fears. It can kind of make me spiral out and kind of not want to just lead probably at the level or the capacity that I ought to. And so actually, let me take you back a little bit. Because this passion for leadership for me has been there for as long as I can possibly remember, but I truly am far from an extraordinary leader. When I was in my early 20s, this was back in my music business days, I was probably 22 or 23 years old, had been recently promoted to the manager of this little division of the company, and I had one employee who reported to me. One paid employee who reported to me. I'd had interns previous to this, but I finally had, an actual staff person assigned to me. So I'm pretty excited about this, and pretty proud of the fact that I've been promoted to this new role. I now have a real role of leadership, or so I thought. And I dove headfirst into this, just all excited about leading this employee and accomplishing all these great things that we needed to accomplish. And so a couple weeks go by. Come on in. We're just getting settled in. Couple weeks go by, and I'm frustrated. Anybody been frustrated with an employee or volunteer? Yeah. So I'm frustrated because this employee is just not meeting my expectations, right? I mean, he didn't do things the way I thought they should be done. They didn't do things exactly the way I described and directed them. It just wasn't going to work. Like, they just weren't working out. So I went to my boss, who was a mentor and obviously my boss, and I said, you know what? This employee's not working. Like, this just isn't going to work. We're going to have to find somebody else. She's not doing what I told her to do. She's not, carrying out the plans exactly the way I thought she should do them. Keep in mind, I'm an, overachiever, A-type, personality. Like, I am every poor employee's living nightmare. And I thought I was their greatest gift. So my boss looks at me and he says, Jenny, he says, if you want to work with widgets, go work at a factory. If you want to work with people, you're going to have to learn how to lead them and how to love them. And guys, I mean, that was like a sucker punch to my gut, because I had been, this leader, my boss, had been such a champion of mine. Like, he was such an encourager. He was so supportive. Up until that time, I think I mostly got pats on the back. And that experience, when he said those words, and there was probably a whole lot of other conversation that went along with that, but I just will not forget that moment where he just helped me recognize I was looking at this employee as just a cog in my machine to get things done. Like, this person was just a widget in my factory helping me get, my goal accomplished. And really, leadership was about the individual, was about seeing that person and their giftedness and their potential and helping draw that out and marry that with the needs of the organization. And it radically changed my view of leadership. And it really haunts me to this day, because what I realized in that moment is that leadership isn't about me, and it isn't even really for me. Right? Leadership isn't about my success or even my growth or my future or my praise or my accolades. Leadership, true, I think God-honoring leadership is really about others and about serving the people we lead. So, and really this is kind of the crux of it for me, is that leadership shapes human lives. And for that reason, leadership is sacred work. that leadership shapes human lives. And for that reason, it is sacred work. Like, we get the sacred responsibility of partnering with God to impact the people around us. And that is really sacred work. Y'all have probably had a really good boss at some point, and they shaped you in really powerful ways, didn't they? And then I suspect most of y'all have also had maybe a really poor boss or a poor leader, and it caused some harm, didn't it? And so you know this because you've experienced this, that leadership shapes human lives. Like, it impacts you in significant ways. And that's why the responsibility of leadership is such a important burden for us to understand. Paul David Tripp says this. He says, this is kind of small, sorry guys. Embedded in the larger story of redemption is a principle we must not miss. God uses ordinary people to do extraordinary things in the lives of others. And I find a ton of hope in this because I just kind of really like just overwhelmed you all with the burden of leadership, right? I just made you all go, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want to lead anybody because I don't want to, you know, like lead them poorly. What I love about this is Paul is saying God uses ordinary people. So this is us and our brokenness and our challenges, but to do extraordinary things in the lives of others. Like, there's a partnership that we get to be a part of with God. And so how do we move from some of our ordinariness to this extraordinary impact? That search for me was just kind of, you know, so that leadership moment with my boss, and he kind of just, you know, sucker punched me and caused me to realize I had a lot to do to grow as a leader, put me on this just quest to figure out, well, what does it mean to be an extraordinary leader? What does it mean to lead from my extraordinary best? Like, how do I do this well? Because this is important stuff. I've been led well and I've been led poorly. Like, how do I do this in a way that really honors God and really serves others well? So I, you know, just continue. And the reality was I kept finding myself in more and more leadership environments, and I became increasingly aware of my inadequacies and inconsistencies as a leader. Y'all know this, that the more you learn, you have to learn, right? You know, so it's like the more I would get put in leadership opportunities, the more I realized how much I had to develop as a leader. And so I kind of became a little overwhelmed by this and thought, I've got to do some more studying. I've got to understand, what does it mean to be an extraordinary leader? Is there a, you know, some hero throughout scripture that I can look at, obviously the life of Jesus, but beyond that, is there a framework or is there a model really practically that I can look at? And so I began to study leaders throughout history. I began to just comb the Bible backwards and forwards, like looking for what's a framework for leadership that can help me, just kind of have a process or a plan to kind of approach leadership from. And it showed up for me in one of the most fundamental elements of my faith. And I want to take you to Mark chapter 12, verses 30 and 31. And you'll be super familiar with this. This is in Mark. This is where Jesus is being challenged with controversial questions about taxes and the resurrection. So really fun stuff, right? And then what did they say? The final question they posed to him was, which commandment is the most important of all? And you guys know this. And he responds with, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And he follows it with the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. So I looked at this, and actually let me give you a little more context before I break it down for you a little bit more. In Jewish tradition, the Shema, or what we know as the Great Commandment, is recited three times a day as part of devotional life. So this commandment right here is really important to Jewish custom. Three times a day they're reciting this. And I think it's the Baker Encyclopedia says this. It says, within the Shema is found both a fundamental doctrinal truth. So there's a truth, and then there's a resultant obligation. So there's a truth here, and then there's an obligation to this. And they say there's an urgency connected to the teaching because the word Shema demands that the hearer respond with his total being to the fact and demands of this revelation. So this is, like, as you look at this, because a lot of us boil down to the great command to love God and love others, right? Some of you, that's even like your vision statements of your church, which is wonderful. But the reason why I believe, and you know, what some of the scholars believe, that Jesus just says, love the Lord your God. He doesn't stop there. He says, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, is that that's our total being. That's the obligation, is that we're supposed to do that with our total being, with all of who we are. Those four dimensions kind of make up who we are. So the Shema, or the Great Commandment, I think has huge implications for us as leaders. And this is why, because this is where I think it gives us the model for extraordinary leadership, because the concept of this, when Jesus asks us to love God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, he's saying we should love God with all of who we are, with everything in us. And then when he says, love your neighbor as yourself, again, the implication is to love with all of who we are. And so when I consider my life as a leader, it means leading with all of who I am, for the benefit of God and others. And the light bulb moment for me was like going back to that example of leadership in those early days for me with that first employee. And I was not loving that staff person with my heart and my soul. Not even some strength. I was just loving them all with mind. Like the only way I was leading them was with mind. I was just doing strategy, planning, tactics, barking orders all day long. And there was no heart, there was no soul, there was no strength in that leadership. And so here I'm going to kind of unpack this for you, because I kind of want you to see how this starts to come together, because all of us have a tendency to lead from one of these dimensions or another. And I think the extraordinary part of our leadership emerges when all four of these dimensions collide and they show up in our life and leadership every day. So let me give you a little bit of a definition here. Extraordinary leadership is found in a leader who has searched to discover his or her authentic self. So it's that lead yourself piece. And then from that place, influences others to accomplish great dreams through intentional relationships, which is the heart of leadership, spiritual awareness, which is the soul of leadership. And we're going to talk about each of these, so we're just giving you a snapshot. Wise counsel, which is the mind, the strategic part of leadership. And relentless vision, the strength piece, the fourth of those dimensions. And why I believe this framework is so critical is that when I look at my life and the lives of others, many of us lead from one or two of these dimensions, just naturally. You know, there's a little bit of our wiring that naturally lends to us being strong in one or the other. Some of you lead with a lot of heart, a lot of ministry folks in here. So some of you lead with a lot of heart. This comes really easily. You love people, but you might lack a little strategy or vision. Others of you, a little more wired like me, you might lead with a lot of strategy or with the tactics, but you can lack a little heart and soul. Not probably too much of a surprise is that I was called heartless a time or two in my leadership, especially in my early leadership journey, because I just led with so much strategy and vision that I've kind of left. I didn't see people for who they were. So I'm going to give you an opportunity right now to take a little bit of an assessment. This will keep you awake too. So right now on just a sheet of paper, write down these four little icons here. You diamond, a circle, a star, and an X. And you can just kind of write that out with the equal marks next to it. All right, so if you have that, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you four or five different slides, and on these slides is a statement. And so I want you to go one by one. I'm just going to give you time to do this on your own. And actually, I'm going to read them aloud to you. But when I read that statement, if that is true of you most of the time, so the majority of the time, not if it kind of is the true, not if it's sometimes true, if it's true of the for you of the majority of your time, then I want you to put a little hashtag next to that, the same symbol on that little sheet you made. Does that make sense? So, for instance, here's a statement. I subscribe to blogs and email newsletters that explore my industry, ministry, and I like to read them daily. So if you're subscribed to a lot of ministry blogs, you read that stuff regularly, you thrive on it, gives you lots of energy, you do that daily, then I want you to put a little check mark next to the star on your paper. If it's sometimes true, if it's occasionally true, then don't mark it, okay? You don't need to mark every one of them. And I'll read these and we'll kind of go along. So just kind of your gut reaction. The next one, when meeting with an employee, I first like to hear about his or her family and how he or she is doing personally. So if you've got a one-on-one meeting with an employee or volunteer, let's say some of you don't have staff yet, but you have key volunteers or leaders that you're working with. So when you meet with them, the first thing you talk about is family. Put a check mark. If not, that's okay. Just let that one pass. Put a check by the diamond. I pray for my team members regularly. Now, sometimes we can feel like we should, so we'll just put it down because it feels like the right thing to do. I'm saying you pray for them regularly. Pray specifically for your team members regularly. Put a mark by the zero or the circle. I believe wholeheartedly in the mission of my or the vision of my organization. If that's true most of the time, put a mark by the X. I plan regular events or outings to celebrate my team members and let them know they're appreciated. Put a mark by the diamond. Everybody with me so far? I can move ahead? Okay. Okay, here's another set. Just keep going, same format. I set goals with and for my team members and create follow-up plans to measure the results. So I'm making plans and I'm checking up on them. Put a mark by the star. When my schedule for the day starts to get out of hand, I stop, look at it, quickly prioritize, turning down or rescheduling the non-urgent tasks. If that's true of you, you kind of, you know, when it gets crazy, you stop everything, you reprioritize and start again, put a mark by the X. When deadlines are looming, I tend to focus more on the tasks that need to be accomplished than the people doing the tasks. Does that sound like me in my early days of leadership? Put a mark by the star. I avoid gossip, complaints, criticism in my daily speech and conversation. Put a mark by the circle. I regularly let my team members know that they are valuable to our organization and their work is essential to the mission. I regularly let them know the key here is that you tell them. And if that's mostly true, then put a mark by the diamond. Everybody still with me? If I jump too quick ahead, like, let me know. Okay, next one. I know my strengths, and I like to focus on working in those areas while delegating the items I'm not as strong at. Put a mark by the X. I'm always looking for opportunities to connect my team's everyday work to the big picture of our mission or vision and to share that connection with my team. So connecting the dots, you're always connecting the dots to the big picture vision for them. Put a mark by the X. I'm good at defining systems and strategies and holding my team accountable to them. Put a mark by the star. I seek opportunities to encourage those I lead by praising them and giving them feedback to help them develop further. Mark by the diamond. I pray for wisdom for my team members so that they'll grow in influence. Mark by the circle. Everybody still good? Okay. We've got one or two more. Should I go faster or slower? Or are we right about? We're good? Pacing? Okay. I judge my success as a leader by how well I'm serving my team. Put a mark by the circle. I feel stronger at painting the big picture than fleshing out the minute details. I devote time to meeting with a mentor or group of people who are ahead of me and who will help stretch my thinking and challenge me. Put a mark by the star. I want my team members to know that they are loved and that they can talk to me about anything. Put a mark by the diamond. My leadership position is not just a job to me. It's where I live out my strongest convictions, passions, and hopes for the future. Put a mark by the X. Okay, we're almost there. I regularly take stock of my spiritual growth. Put a mark by the circle. I sometimes get distracted by worrying if my leaders or team members like me. Put a mark by the diamond. If I don't know how to do something, I do research and learn how to do it, or I assign it to someone who knows how to do it. Put a mark by the star. I feel a great responsibility to God for how I lead my team and pray for his guidance daily. Put a mark by the circle. And I'm always dreaming up new ideas for building my team. It says business there, but church, and can't wait to implement them. And last three. Pretty good? It frustrates me if I'm not able to communicate to my team members the heart behind a decision I've made that affects them. I believe my spiritual health has a direct effect on my leadership ability, marked by the circle. And I regularly review my team's meeting structure to see which meetings are necessary and to ensure we're making the most of our time and our resources, put a mark by the star. Okay, so now go back to your list, the four symbols, and just tally them up, each individual one, and see you should have just a total for each individual dimension or symbol. And then I'll give you the key to that symbol, which this isn't like overly difficult to figure out, but you're probably tracking with me. So the diamond, if you responded to the diamonds, then it's heart. The circles are soul. The stars are mind. And the X is strength. So you probably have one or two of those that were higher in number than the others. Is that true? How many of you were highest in heart? It's a team of church leaders. You got to have a lot of heart in this room, okay? How many of you were strong in soul? That was your highest. Yep. Good chunk of you. How many strong in mind? Okay. Handful of you. And strength. Lots of vision. Lots of visionary leaders in here. So does that kind of give you, how accurate does that feel? It feel kind of reflective of, as I was kind of describing it a little bit, the heart, soul, mind, and strength that, you know, you probably knew as even as I'm talking, which ones might be a little stronger for you. So I want to give you all just a little snapshot of each of these, because really what I'm trying to do is help you develop an awareness of how all four work together. So naturally you're strong in one or two of them. Okay. For me, when I do the assessment, mind and strength are my top two, the strategy and the vision piece. Those are the strong ones for me. So I know as a leader, I have to work a little harder on heart and soul to make sure. It doesn't mean that I don't care or that I'm not spiritual about the reasons why I do it, but in how I carry out my work, I will carry out my work and my leadership with a lot more strategy and vision. Just naturally, it's kind of part of my wiring. It coincides with if you've done Strengths Finders, or you've done even your spiritual gifts, or if you've done Myers-Briggs, or any of those personality assessments, there's going to be a similarity here in that those natural strengths, giftedness, tendencies are going to show up. And that's naturally how you lead. But my push on all of us as leaders is that I think we most reflect the heart of God in our leadership when we're leading through all four dimensions and an awareness of all of them. And so I'm going to break those down for you, give you a few examples, kind of talk about that together. And I thought I was going somewhere else, and then I just lost my train of thought. So let's just dive into these, all four of the dimensions, and I'm going to give you a little more about each one of them. So leading with all your heart. This is the relational side of leadership. It's all about relationships. The heart of a leader is the truest part of who you are. So this is like core to who you are. Your heart is the center of your emotions and desires and wishes. Your heart is what most connects you with others. Love God, love others begins in the heart. So this is kind of core to who you are. This is why your heart probably shows up the most with your family. You're probably the most you when you're with your family, because this is where you feel the most comfortable expressing emotions, desires, etc. It's with the people who you're the safest with is who you tend to show heart to. So it is the piece of us that connects us with others. And so for somebody like myself that has a little more difficulty opening up and making connection, I have to work harder at recognizing the need for this in my life and in my story. It's a relational dimension of leadership. So what is it? Just a couple of things. It's not all these things, but these are a couple of things. Relational leadership is really about influence. You all know this, that you really have to, especially those of you who are recruiting volunteers, well, they're not there for a paycheck, are they? So the way you motivate and inspire them is a lot through vision, but then they need to know you care about them, right? Like, in order for them to commit, to serve, to give their time and their energy, and this is true of your staff too, because they'll eventually move on if they just feel uncared for. But people are there to, because they know that they're cared about, and you're essentially what? You're loving them. And so the influence piece is all about earning influence through relationships rather than authority. It's really the beginning point of leadership. A lot of times I'll talk about the power of influence and the significance of influence, because we all have a circle of influence of people that we have interaction with, we have engagement with day in and day out. And are we influencing them for good or for bad? We're always influencing people. So whether we're aware of it or not is really the kicker here. And the relational piece just gives us a ton of influence with people. It's kind of that starting point of leadership, is having that opportunity to influence them. The other piece here is EQ, emotional intelligence or emotional quotient. There's a lot of conversation about this. What's fascinating, and I think we in ministry get this a little bit better, but I'm seeing more and more in business circles where they're talking about emotional intelligence. And just, you know, it used to be that top-down leadership, hierarchy, just do your job would work. And that's just not even working in corporate cultures anymore. Like, the importance of emotionally connecting with people, emotionally understanding how you impact people when you engage with them. I had no idea when I was working with that first employee that I was intimidating her to death, right? Because I was being so directive, and so I thought we had a great vision and we both agreed on that. And, you know, here we go, we're off to the races. But I was so intense with my leadership, and I wasn't aware of it. It was a gap. It was a deficit for me that I didn't have the emotional awareness, the emotional intelligence to understand how I was impacting that person. So emotional intelligence is a big part of leading with our heart. And then trust. Trust is a big one here, and that as we build relationships, we build trust with the people we lead. And if you study any Patrick Lencioni's work, just the significance of trust in leadership equations and how that's really the foundation of our team structures and of our influence with people is trust. When we lead from the heart, we see others as living, breathing humans. We see their stories, their emotions, their families, their strengths, their weaknesses, the tragedies and joys. Like, we see them as a complete person. We see all of who they are, not just that cog in the wheel helping us get a mission accomplished, but we really see them as human. And when we see people as human, we can relate to them through our God-given power to understand one another through emotional connection. Like, God has given us just this unique ability to connect to each other through emotional connection, and it's so incredibly powerful. So how do we do it? I start here with always encourage. And again, this could be in any order, but I think encouragement is huge. Especially if you're somebody who's strong in mind or strength, you may have a tendency to be a critic. And we have to work hard to name what's good. So in my case, I am super driven. There's always a goal. There's something I want to accomplish. And so I am always just pushing forward towards that goal. And if I'm not careful, I will overlook what's good and just keep focusing on what needs to improve. That makes sense. Some of you have been on the receiving end of that, of the boss who's always driving, and nothing's ever good enough. And you're like, but there is some stuff that's good. Or maybe you're the boss who might do that. Or maybe you're a great boss who doesn't do that. But always encouraging, looking to find places where you can name what's good. Because there's always something that's good. Now, it doesn't mean we ignore what needs coaching and critiquing. We'll get to that when we talk about strategy and leading from our mind. But looking for the places where we're always encouraging and we're praising, there's a familiar phrase, what gets rewarded gets repeated. And so as leaders, even leading from our heart means looking for those places where we can reinforce what's good about how that that staff person or that volunteer is leading, how they're doing their role, and so forth. So let me give you an example of this, just, you know, in awareness. So this is a dimension that is a little bit more, doesn't come as naturally for me. So I've had to learn to apply my mind to learning how to lead better from my heart, if that makes sense. And so I've had to get a bit strategic about it and build in disciplines in my life that would help me slow down to see people. And if you wrote nothing else about leading from the heart, I would just say slow down to see people. Slow down to see who they are, to see their needs, to see their concerns. And so I built in rhythms in my life where in my one-on-one meetings with staff members, I would start that meeting with 2 minutes of, hey, tell me how you're doing. How's your family? I'd keep an Evernote file. I knew their dog's name, their kid's name, their wife's name, their, you know, like, and I had to keep a little Evernote file with that, but it helped me remember the significant things in their lives. If their kid just had a recital or a big game or whatever it was, like looking for those moments where I could, and some of you, there's a lot of heart people in the room, so I probably don't need to be overemphasizing this because you get it, but it was a learning point for me. I had to learn how to build in some of those systems that helped me lead with greater awareness of relationally connecting with people. Another piece that I did is when I recruit an assistant to work with me, I'm always looking for an assistant with a lot of heart because I know that I'm not great there. And so my assistant is often the, you know, kind of the front lines for me and, you know, as teams engage with me. And so she could be the one that would tell me, hey, I think you're kind of wearing everybody out right now. Because they would tell her. They wouldn't tell me. They were too afraid to tell me, but they'd tell her. And I don't know if they thought she wouldn't tell me or if they were strategically telling her so she would tell me. But either way, it worked to everybody's benefit because if the team was starting to get burned out because I was driving us too hard on an initiative, she was kind of my secret weapon. She kind of had the pulse on what's the heart? How are people doing? How are they reacting? She was my emotional intelligence for me. And so there's things like that that help us lead with a greater awareness. It's kind of, you know, as we look at these four dimensions and we recognize the ones we're strong and the ones we're weak in, it's the beauty of community too. And that we really work to build our teams. And this would be my encouragement to you is also looking for, do you have all four dimensions represented among your whole team? You know, do you have people with strengths in each one of these dimensions who are showing up at the table when you're making decisions, you're making plans, because they're helping put another lens on it. And what is it helping us to do? It's helping us lead with our whole being, with all of who we are, right? So let's talk about leading with our soul. And this is the spiritual awareness piece. The soul of us is the part of us that longs to know God. It's the epicenter of morality, integrity, humility, servanthood, all things that we really want from our leaders, right? It's a spiritual component of our leadership, and it gives us the sensitivity to engage in conversations that help lead people closer to God. It's the distinction that sets you apart as a faith-based leader, and a lot of you scored strong in soul, which makes sense. We're all in ministry, or the majority of us in this room are in ministry. Now, the caution I want to give to you all here as ministry leaders, church leaders, is that you would think that we would be really good at this. Because we're leading churches, we're leading ministries. And we probably do lead from our soul really well when it comes to our congregations. But sometimes we don't do this as well with our staff teams or our volunteer teams. Okay? We get so busy doing the ministry, doing the work of the ministry, that we're not slowing down and actually doing the soul care and the spiritual connection with our team. So I just would give you that little caveat that I see, and I talk to churches and church leaders, and I hear from church staff that they wish they prayed together a little more. They wish that that they knew their leader was praying for them. I once talked to a senior pastor, and his executive pastor was a good friend of mine. We always were sharing ideas. Our churches were about the same size. And I will never forget that senior pastor said to me, he said, Jenny, every day I pray for wisdom for my executive pastor every day. And he told his executive pastor that every day, and just that, you know, that he was praying for wisdom for him. And it was like, and they still serve together. Like, they've been serving together probably over a decade, but the power and the significance of that senior leader saw that. And actually, if you, I'm forgetting what the passage it's in, but, Paul is talking to, I think it's the church at Corinth. And he prays for wisdom for the church leader. So he's in prison, right? He prays for wisdom for those leaders. And I think that's so powerful because oftentimes as leaders, we pray that God just gives us wisdom, right? We pray, you know, which is good. We should be praying for wisdom. But sometimes it just becomes a selfish prayer that God give me all the wisdom. And what I'm inspired by Paul's story and then the senior pastor that I was talking about is that they were actually praying for wisdom for their staff. They didn't feel like the wisdom had to only come through them, but that they were praying that their staff would be, or the church leaders would be imparted with wisdom so that they could carry out the mission and vision that God had called them to. And I just think that's so striking and it's so powerful. And this is how we lead with soul as leaders, beyond just doing our responsibilities as church leaders, our opportunity to lead our teams, our direct teams, with a little bit more soul is really powerful. So what it is, I just went on a rant there and didn't even pay attention to my notes. It's faith as a guiding principle. And again, we're in a ministry culture here. This is often really important to marketplace leaders when I'm talking to them, because oftentimes they will think, well, I can't lead from that dimension because, you know, I'm in the marketplace. I can't really talk about my faith. It's not appropriate, blah, blah, blah. And what I will tell them is you can be praying for your staff people even if they don't know it. So you can lead with soul even if they don't know that you're praying for them every day, that you're praying for their wife, their kids, their families, etc. You can be praying for them. And that back to the integrity, the morality, are the fruit of the Spirit showing up as you're showing up at work. You know, those are things, those can guide our lives as leaders, even if we're in cultures where we can't just have our faith just kind of openly out there. So faith as a guiding principle is incredibly important. It comes up, it's a little more natural because it's part of your cultures and ministry settings, but it's so powerful, I think, to the people in the marketplace. And it's also a desire to lead people closer to God. So again, this one's a little more common. This is a bit, you know, more directly related to mission for you guys. But having that perspective even with your staff team or your volunteer teams is really powerful. And then how? We need to model a life submitted to God. And what does that look like? You know, I think just simple things like the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, are those things showing up regularly? Is that what my team experiences from me? Because again, the people closest to us get the most raw, honest version of us, right? And so what do they see every day as they interact with us? Second thing there is be a servant. Am I willing to just serve people and pour into them? And then we've talked about this, the pray for wisdom, both for yourself, but also for your team. Just praying for wisdom diligently, recognizing those seasons of momentum and praying for God to give you wisdom and how you're leading through those critical seasons in the story of your church and your ministry. For sake of time, I'm going to keep kind of pushing through on some of these. Leading with all your mind. This is a strategy or the wisdom side. The mind is the seat of intellectual activity. It's what enables us to deliberate, to process, to reflect, to ponder, to remember. It is amazing what our minds can do and how God has wired our brains. It's where we find clarity, and it's where God imparts wisdom. So we pray for wisdom from the spiritual side of leadership to our mind is where that wisdom is imparted. And it can be viewed as the managerial component of leadership. Ooh, we don't like to talk about that. That means system structures, strategies, all that fun stuff that sometimes we try to shy away from. Here's the unique thing about this one is that in ministry settings, I usually see this one either overused or underused. Okay. So I will see sometimes churches really shy away from any system strategy process because they may have been in a culture that was too extreme on those things. And so they kind of go the whole other direction and don't want to do any of that stuff because it feels too corporate. It feels too bureaucratic, just feels a little messy. Or I see churches and teams go to the other extreme where they discover a few systems and processes that are working well. And they just start to put all of those things in place and they kind of take the heart and soul out of leadership and they only lead from that. So oftentimes in ministry settings, I see one extreme or the other. So, but the mind is what enables us to take the leader's instinct and inspiration and put them into action. So the mind is really that get it done component of leadership. It's the piece that is, I often say that as a leader, I put feet to vision. Like I'm a get it done person. You give me the goal, I'm going to give you the steps from A to Z. So that's how I work. I think very strategically like that. So what is it? It's strategy. It's that ability to plan, and create the steps for the team. It's also decision-making. Anybody been a part of a team where you just couldn't make a decision? You need a little more mind, potentially, in that culture, a little more strategic leadership. It's also a posture of continuous learning. So, you know, you guys are here for this, right? You're here at Exponential because you are learning. You're trying to learn and grow as a leader. So you're really demonstrating a little bit of leading from your mind by just being here and being devoted to continuous learning and growth. And so how do we do it? Couple things here, discipline. And it's how we order, it's how we structure both our lives and our teams, how we kind of manage and create disciplines in our work. It's an ability, it's a discernment to slow down or to speed up as needed, to really know how to lead the team, what the team needs in that season, what the organization needs in that season. It's stewardship. So this is a really important one. Sometimes when we get a little resistant to the idea of, you know, some systems and processes might be necessary in our ministries and organizations, sometimes we need to remember that it's a stewardship principle too. that there's just a responsibility there to make wise decisions about how we steward the resources that have been entrusted to us. So being purposeful about this is a stewardship component to leadership as well. And then it's also accountability. And again, sometimes we're a little resistant to that word, but leading from our minds, that strategic part of leadership puts points of accountability in our culture, not overly so that, you know, you go back to, when the mind, the strategy part is overused, you get the leader that I was in my early 20s, right? When it's in balance with heart, soul, and strength, it's really important and it's really helpful. There's just a healthy accountability in the culture that keeps people tethered to the responsibilities, to helping moving mission forward, to being accountable to the people who are faithfully giving their tithes and offerings that allow us to do the ministry work. Like, there's stewardship and there's accountability all wrapped up, and that's really, really valuable. But it has to be it has to be managed with the other three dimensions. Make sense? You guys tracking with me? Okay. All right, let's talk about the last one, leading with all your strength. This is the vision side of leadership. A lot of you in the room are this one as well. So as leaders, we provide strength for our teams when we understand the power of vision. You all know this. Those you lead must know that you deeply believe in where you're leading them and why you're leading them there. I suspect you're all familiar with the keep calm and carry on mantra that's shown up in like every different conceivable, like, you know, billboard or t-shirt or whatever. But do you know where that actually came from? So that was the vision that Winston Churchill cast as they were as enabling the British to persevere against the Nazis in World War II. That was the mantra. I mean, I feel like we've made that cheesy now, but like, that was Winston Churchill's like vision to the British military as they're taking on the Nazis, is keep calm and carry on, just slow and steady. Like, we've got to just stay the course, you know, and obviously that was a really important point in history. So we need to keep people tethered to just where we're going and why we're going there. So what is it? Great vision provides hope. Like, it provides hope. It defines potential. It helps us remember where we're going, why we're going there, what's the possibility ahead of us. This is both, so there's two sides to this. You're casting vision for your organization and where your organization is going, and so you need to help your team see where you're going, why you're going, how their work connects to that great vision. Then you also need to be casting vision for that individual person, that team member, that staff member, that volunteer, and helping them have hope for their own personal growth and development. This is kind of a two-sided one here. And it protects and it propels momentum. So a clear vision cast regularly is going to protect and propel the momentum of your ministry and of your organization, right? How do we do it? We inspire with confidence. This confidence is a humble confidence that's coming because we're soul leaders that are going to prayer, we're seeking God, and we're finding confidence in the vision and the direction that God is giving us. We also do it through having courage and conviction, the courage to take bold steps and the conviction to stay the course. You know, sometimes we're too quick to give up on something, and great visions are not always easy. They're actually often very hard. Those of you in church planning work, there are long, lonely days that nobody else is seeing the hard work that you're doing. But there's a vision ahead, right? And there's rewards to be reaped later on down the road. And we have to stay the course. It's also being patient and persistent. It's kind of similar vein. Stay committed through the ups and downs. Patient and persistent. I was leading a team, and it was just a team that we had kind of a big project ahead of us, and it wasn't an easy project. There were a lot of people we had to convince, a lot of just slow, a little bit of bureaucracy along the way, and I had to just keep telling the team, be patient and persistent. Be patient that it's going to take time. This is not an overnight goal. Like, we can't get there overnight, but we have to be persistent. We can't give up on it, so we got to be patient and persistent. And then I think this is a Patrick Lencioni phrase, but be the chief reminding officer. So give yourself a new title, that you're the chief reminding officer in the organization. Because what do we know? Vision leaks. Bill Hybels says that. Vision leaks. You all know this. You can tell somebody this week, you know, why they do what they do, if they're sending the coffee out to make sure that, you know, guests have a great experience, that it feels warm and welcoming. And then the next week you're having to tell them again why they do it. I mean, that's a really, you know, kind of simple version, but you can, you know, put that in your context. Like, every week or how, whatever the frequency is, we've got to remind people of what we're doing, why we're doing it, why it matters. Your job as a leader is to be the chief vision caster every day. And if you think you've said it enough, you probably haven't, until they start mimicking you. Like, that's when you know they're starting to get it. Like, when they start repeating it back to you and kind of making fun of you, you know that they're starting to get it. So be the chief vision caster every day. So here's the crux of this. Everything we do as leaders affects the people that we lead. Guys, we're influencing our teams every single day. It's some of the most sacred work that we get to do, the power to influence other people. But the fear of inadequacy can kind of get the best of me some days. But a calling really isn't meant to be a burden. A calling is meant to be compelling. Like, part of the responsibility of leadership is not to be just this burden that we have to bear, but it's this calling that God has given us, this partnership that he's created us for, and it's meant to compel us to continue to pursue his best in us and in others. A calling is the unleashing of all of who you are for God's great good. And that weight of responsibility, the fear of inadequacy, the longing for perfection are all those healthy tensions that keep us tethered to our greatest need as leaders, which is to love the Lord our God with all of our soul, with all of our strength, with all of our mind, and with, which one did I miss? Heart. I missed heart. See, that's the one I'm terrible at. Subconsciously escapes all the time, right? Heart, soul, mind, and strength. And extraordinary leadership emerges from that deep commitment. It's not a fad or a new method or a new model of leadership. I think it's rooted in the great commandment, one of the core essentials of our faith. I think it just gives us a framework to say, you know what? What if I lead with a greater awareness of all four of those dimensions? What if I lead with a little more understanding of how heart, soul, mind, and strength work together to complete my leadership? And what possibly could that do to impact the teams that I get to lead with? This is a quote from a leadership book. It says, "Leadership is not the private reserve of a few charismatic men and women. It's a process ordinary people use when they bring forth the best from themselves and others. When the leader and everyone is liberated, extraordinary things happen." And I would also leave you with just this really familiar passage you know so well, Philippians 1:6. It says, "For I am confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Christ Jesus." Because here's where we get it wrong. Sometimes we think, oh, this idea of extraordinary leadership, this idea of really leading from my extraordinary best, oh, I put the expectation of perfection on myself. Well, this passage gives us grace to say perfection isn't something that we attain here, this side of heaven. But there is a perfecting until. There is work that God is continuing to do until we meet him. And so extraordinary means the pursuit of God's great commandment, leading with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And in that, the perfecting continues. In that, God's work continues in and through us. So my prayer for you guys is, may your leadership be an overflow of all of who you are, heart, soul, mind, and strength. And may that empower you and empower your teams and unleash your ministry to continue to do amazing things. So thank you all so much for being here. Appreciate you guys. I do have just a handful of the books that I wrote on the subject, like, available for sale. So if anybody wants those, that's, like, not a big deal. But I have those available because a few people have asked. So have those. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you all, and have a great rest of your day.